Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We'll be talking about revisionist history regarding Hinduism in school textbooks here for the next half hour of Issues Etc. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to continue our weekly series on teaching a Sunday school lesson. Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House will be our guest tomorrow. God's Covenant with Abraham, picking up the story of Abraham in our ongoing series with Deaconess Pam Nielsen. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Golly, we're in the third hour of the program already. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a contributor to the website getreligion.org. She wants to be known as MZ now. MZ Hemingway. What a name. What a final name. Hemingway, especially when you're a writer. She's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal where they do call her Molly Ziegler-Hemingway. Have your textbooks been saffronized? Molly sounds a little bit like a rapper's name, if you ask me. MZ Hemingway. Sorry.
Maybe I'll try that.
By the way, welcome to the minority. You have apparently recently joined the minority of Americans who enjoy marital bliss, and congratulations.
Thank you. 1 month in, I've decided it's a great wonder to be married, and I think everyone should do it if they find a good partner.
So. You do understand you broke a lot of hearts when you finally said yes to this Hemingway character, don't you?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, I am. I know of a lot of guys who were just pining away, and then when they found out you were getting married, their entire world fell apart. I mean, it was terrible. It was awful. How did you find a husband, by the way?
Well, I've been friends with my husband for a long time, and he and I just grew closer and closer over the years, and it's just the right thing to do.
So has he learned all of your quirks and your idiosyncrasies yet so that everything's running smoothly?
Not at all. Not at all. but overall, very good. So we look forward to many years of bliss.
All right. Well, welcome to the minority. The rest of us are enjoying it as well. We Christians often decry the revisionist history in textbooks regarding our alleged Christian heritage, or they're worried about books like Heather Has Two Mommies, or books pushing evolution in the classroom. Is that the only revisionism that's going on in American textbooks?
Well, those are big problems that Christian parents need to be keeping an eye out for. But actually, one of the biggest growing problems has been with Hindu nationalists trying to rewrite textbooks to make them more favorable to their brand of Hinduism. And because so many people don't know much about Hinduism, this threat has gone largely unchecked. School boards don't know enough about Hinduism to know the agenda behind some of these groups.
So give us just a primer, if you would, on not only Hinduism and why Christians ought to be concerned about it, but also its significance in history and the groups that are trying to apparently rewrite some of that history.
Right. Well, not that Americans haven't had Hindu friends and neighbors for a while, but there certainly has been a larger influx of Hindus with the rise of South Asian immigration. But this story kind of starts back in the 20s in India when an extreme Hindu nationalist group that its opponents consider very xenophobic and racist and fascist, called the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, became more influential. And this group felt that Christians and Muslims were a threat to Hinduism. And after toiling away for many decades, they finally came to power in 1998 under the Bharatiya Janata Party. And they quickly set about changing all the textbooks in the schools to match their Hindu nationalist views, which can basically be summed up as a vigorous defense of the caste system. Well, the international community was outraged at what had happened, and the State Department tried to highlight the problem of this textbook rewriting. And they ended up losing power in 2004, and that happens to be the same year that they took their battle to the United States. And it began in Fairfax County, Virginia. A group of Hindu parents were able to rewrite the textbooks, and with just a fairly small group of parents, and they managed to make all these changes. And so Hindu nationalists across America saw that this was a great opportunity, and they went to California the next year. And California was such an important area because California is schooled by so many textbooks that if they want something to be changed, it gets changed. And so that's kind of where the stage was set up until last year. And those textbook changes were just fascinating. I mean, they seem maybe like subtle changes, but actually what they do is serve to portray Hinduism in a more positive light than the facts might do. So they say that the caste system, which I'm not sure how much listeners know about that, divides all Hindus into different classes based on nothing more than the fortune or misfortune of their birth. And so if you are born into a high caste, you're set for life. If you're born into a low caste, you sort of struggle with making money, having access to food. And if you are below the lowest caste, which was formerly called the Untouchables but is now called Dalit, then you are just completely out of luck, and you will have a very horrible life. You're not allowed to touch any other human in a caste above you. You're not even allowed to let your shadow fall upon them. You are not allowed to enter a Hindu temple. You're not allowed to read Hindu scriptures. And the lower castes and the Dalit make up as much as 75% of the system. So the upper castes really try and make sure that the system stays in place because it works out great for them. Well, it's no surprise that Christianity has been able to make huge inroads among the Dalit, the untouchable caste, because under Christianity, you're viewed as equal with all your other humans, and you have so much more freedom and just a much better life ahead of you. And so Christians have done really well with making inroads there, as well as some Muslims have. And so that's considered a huge threat to these Hindu nationalists.
So give us some of the examples. Do you have examples of how the texts, since they are textbooks, how the texts themselves have actually been modified under pressure from Hindu parents in the case of, say, California or elsewhere on these particular issues about Hinduism's role in history?
Right. And I should give you an update on how successful they were in California, but let's just talk now about what they were trying to do. So, for instance, with the caste system, rather than describing it as something that you're born into based on the fortune of your birth, it would be described as something that developed based on your ability to work in different professions, which is not true. I mean, this is a many thousands of years old system, and it had nothing to do with your placement in a caste had nothing to do with your ability to work in a different profession. Another thing is monotheism. Hindu nationalists like to portray Hinduism as being a monotheistic religion. And Hindus sort of debate this, but Hinduism is sort of an umbrella term for a lot of different belief systems, of which Hindu nationalists represent one. But a lot of people consider Hinduism to be polytheistic because it has so many different gods in it. And so they were very upset when the California textbooks described it as a polytheistic religion. So another thing might be about women's rights. And in the California textbooks, it'll say that under Hinduism, men have more rights than women. And the Hindu nationalists would change that to say, oh, well, they just have different rights. And then other things that are very important to the Hindu nationalists, dealing with their understanding of the origins of Hinduism. So most academics would say that the Aryan people moved from Iran, Indo-Europeans from Central Asia called Aryans, migrated to India and laid the foundation for the religion there. Well, Hindu nationalists are so into this idea that everything was born and bred there in India, they think the migration happened the other way around. They believe that there's scientific evidence that the Earth is 1,900 million years old. They think that Sanskrit is the mother language of every language. And so they have some more outlandish ideas, too, which are not well respected in the academic world.
So how successful were they in their attempt to modify the text of textbooks in California?
Well, they'd suggested literally hundreds of changes, and they kind of won the first round. And then the academic world woke up to what was happening, and they launched a strong counteroffensive. Also, Christian groups had a lot to do with this. Christians representing the Dalit, the Untouchables, and missionary groups that help out the Dalits found out what was going on, and so they helped provide some actual Dalit people to come and talk about whether the way the Hindu nationalists describe the caste system is accurate. And that had just a huge sway on the on the curriculum review committee of the Board of Education. And so what ended up happening was they took each of the, like, 500 suggestions and kind of went point by point evaluating what to do. And they ended up making some of the changes, and others they were not so lucky with their changes.
Why were they initially successful? I'm wondering whether it has to do with the general populace's ignorance about the particulars of Hinduism, or whether it's just that easy to get textbooks changed if you gripe loud enough.
Oh, if it were that way. Actually, the Fairfax County in the Fairfax County, Virginia situation, which happened in 2004, one of the school board members is on record as saying the reason why they made the changes was because they really didn't know enough to do anything else. So when they had these textbooks and then had all these Hindu nationalists come and tell them to make changes, they didn't realize that there might be more than one view in the Hindu community, or there might be more than one view in the Indian American community. And so they just made all the changes without knowing more. It really is ignorance, and I think it's also just the effect of multiculturalism, where any view that's not the, you know, sort of majority or, you know, Western view should be included according to that viewpoint. So people are much less critical about including minority viewpoints than they are about more historical views.
We're talking with M.D. Hemingway about revisionist history, about Hinduism in school textbooks. She's a contributor to the website getreligion.org. She's authored an article in the latest Christian research journal titled "Have Your Textbooks Been Saffronized?" Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our call-in numbers, 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. I'm Todd Wilkin. You're listening to Issues Etc. Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
How you doing?
Very well.
Molly, I really enjoy your blog on Get Religion.
Thank you.
And from what you described to me, it sounds like it's not about the truth or historical facts. It's more about spin and propaganda. Is that a good way to look at the way that the Hindu nationalists, or even a lot of groups, where they're not really interested in facts, they're interested in spin?
Thank you, Steve. Molly?
Yeah, I think there are two things to think there. One is that everyone has their own perspective, and curriculum is just an obvious platform for people to try and get their own spin or their own view forward, regardless of whether it has historical merit. Which actually kind of brings me to the second point, which is I think that parents should be aware that things like this happen in every aspect of curriculum every day. And it's very difficult to fight it. And one of the things that's interesting when you look at the American system is that certain religious groups quickly figured out that so-called secular schools or non-sectarian schools actually did promulgate viewpoints. And so you see Roman Catholics and Lutherans developing very robust private school systems so that they could inculcate in their children their own perspective. And so as much as we like to think that a government school or a public school be free from this spin in, you know, history or math or, you know, anything, what's happening is kids are getting they're having viewpoints pushed on them based on whoever won the curriculum battle for that.
What I found interesting in your story in the Christian Research Journal is that the reaction from Hindu scholars was not positive to this attempt to spin Hindu history in California textbooks. It was often Hindus themselves who had the strongest reaction.
That is very true, and that's why, again, it's important if something like this happens in your school district where a group of people claiming that they represent all Hindus or all Indian Americans are saying something, you might want to learn a little bit more about it and see if it's true that these views are not contested among the Hindu or Indian community. And, yeah, it is true that the Harvard professor Michael Witzel was one of the people who worked very hard to fight the textbook changes in California. And it's also interesting to note that because he has written against these attempts by Hindu nationalists, he's received, you know, horrible threats, death threats, and threats of violence against him. And here he is, a professor at Harvard. And so a lot of professors, I mean, I can't remember how many, but maybe 4 or 5 dozen signed the letter to the California School Board about how they shouldn't make the changes. And a lot of Indian groups in California fought the changes.
I mean, this may be disturbing to our listeners to learn that the content of our textbooks can be subject to pressure from groups that have any kind of special interest. And it raises the broader question of how our textbooks, especially in our public schools, often those textbooks are used by private and parochial schools as well, how they can be safeguarded in terms of their accuracy with regard to history. Or nowadays, a math textbook is going to teach all sorts of things outside of math. It's amazing to, you know, an algebra textbook that is making sidelong attempts to do social engineering while it's teaching how to graph absolute values and things like that. How do we guard our textbooks for, and therefore our classrooms?
Well, it's somewhat of an uphill battle. Again, California is the largest purchaser of textbooks, so whatever they say goes tends to go across the country. The Hindu nationalists are reported to be taking their next battle to Texas, which is similarly a very large state with a lot of textbooks bought, and so it's just going to be flooding the market with textbooks that that might have factual inaccuracies or viewpoint bias that that are unacceptable to Christian parents. And I think, though, that if you are able to educate your children and inculcate in them a Christian education, that's definitely the best means of raising your children up in the way that they should go. If you don't have access to a good parochial school or a means of home tutoring your children or, you know, something else that works with your family decision, I think it's just important to teach kids how to be critical thinkers so that they know how to sift through what they read in these textbooks and not believe everything that they read while also learning how to be good students, because there's just no way you can fight all of the multiculturalism or bias that you're going to face in the world.
In perusing your writings at GetReligion.org, I noticed you had some thoughts on a recent St. Louis Post-Dispatch story about an Episcopal church in Edwardsville, Illinois, just on the other side of the river, that wants a new bishop. Tell us the story and your take on how the story was treated in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Yeah, well, I first of all just want to say I really do like Tim Townsend, who's the religious reporter there in St. Louis, and I think he's, I don't know him personally, but I think he's done a great job with stories there. He wrote about this parish in Illinois that has fought with its bishop and has resisted his discipline. And the way he wrote it up was that it was all over sexual issues, like the bishop didn't like, the bishop didn't or confirm someone because she was a lesbian. And then when the church fought, he refused to commune anyone. You know, it was some sort of long story like that. Now, the bishop, in a different story, not in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, actually says that was not accurately written and that this was not about sexual issues. This was about basically larger doctrinal issues, and he didn't really appreciate the way it was written up. And so I actually plan to do a follow-up on that to sort of get down to the nitty-gritty of that story. But one of the things that I'd pointed out when I was reading Tim Townsend's article was that he kept on portraying the conservatives in the Episcopal Church as being angry. They were angry at the election of Bishop Jeffert Shiori. They were angry at all these different decisions that the larger Episcopal Church has made in recent years. And he quoted someone who responded to the discipline given by the bishop as saying that they needed to get a new bishop, someone who would love them. And what I was trying to point out when I analyzed the piece was that for people who practice church discipline, it is an expression of love. It's not fun to go through. It's very difficult. It can involve excommunication. It can be very painful, but at root, it's about love. And so a pastor or a bishop who engages in church discipline properly is doing it because he is concerned about the very soul of his sheep or the souls of his sheep. And what greater expression of love can there be than to not go along with error and actually do the hard work of trying to correct that error?
You've been with GetReligion.org for a couple of months now. Tell us about GetReligion.org and what the contributors there are doing.
Yeah, I've actually been with Get Religion since last December, And we are a group of mainstream reporters, and we look at the way the mainstream media handles religious issues. And the name of the site, Get Religion, is based on our view that, for the most part, mainstream reporters do not get religion. They just don't know how to write about it. They don't know very much about doctrinal issues. They don't know very much about different religious expressions. And so they just tend to do a pretty poor job of writing about it. So what we do is highlight examples of good religion reporting, and we also highlight those examples that show that some people need more work. And my other contributor, or the editor of the site, is Terry Mattingly, and my other contributor is Daniel Pulliam. And it's just a great, fun site, and it's read. We know we're read by many mainstream reporters because the moment we write something about them, they respond to us, you know, privately. And so people, it's nice to have that kind of impact on religion reporting, and hopefully things will continue to improve.
Okay, you might not want to name names, but maybe you will. In your opinion, name one or two of the reporters, mainstream reporters out there in the United States who are really doing it right, who are covering religion in a fair and an honest way.
I think Eric Gorski, who writes for the Denver Post, does a fantastic job, and I've seen it time and time again. He'll take some easy issue that could easily be characterized as, say, you know, right-wing extremists going batty again, and he'll actually take the time to understand the doctrinal views of the people in play. I mean, he's got the subtleties down of stuff like unionism and syncretism, and he's just a treasure, I think, for Denver area readers. I like him a lot. I do think Tim Townsend from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is a big improvement over the predecessor he had, and it seems like I'm actually not sure how many people agree with me on that one. But I like actually Lori Goodstein from the New York Times. And it's worth pointing out that not everyone who writes for the New York Times is a bad reporter. She also takes a lot of time with her subjects. And so while the New York Times in general might struggle with horrible bias issues, I think she is a very notable exception to that.
Hey, Molly, before we let you go, what's your prediction for the Mets and Cards game tonight?
Oh, man. Well, I think I'm a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan because my mother is from St. Louis, and I've been watching every game. I think that if we don't win tonight, we are definitely going to lose the series, but I have extremely high hopes that Carpenter is going to take us in tonight. So that's my prediction, and I'm sticking to it.
Are you going to put any money on it?
No, I'm not a gambler, so.
All right. Molly, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you so much.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a contributor to the website getreligion.org, getreligion.org, and she's author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled, Have Your Textbooks Been Saffronized? When we come back from this break, we've got the last half hour of Issues Etc. ahead. We're going to play four more spots that are trying to tell the truth about Amendment 2 here in Missouri, encouraging voters to vote against human cloning for destructive biomedical research. We're going to play four more, the final four in our 16, and then we want you to choose, of these four, the one that you think is most effective, and we want you to call us or email us and tell us why. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Want to hear from Missourians and people outside the state of Missouri on these Amendment 2 ads.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, the Trinity is impossible for an adult to believe as well as a child.
Dr. Jim Gimbel, author of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Apostles' Creed, on teaching the Trinity to children.
But the things that God does, the three persons of the Trinity, each involved a little bit differently, are visible to us. And this follows Martin Luther, who was a significant figure for saying we need to try and do what we can to make the teachings of God understandable to people of all ages. Not dumb down the doctrine, but make it understandable for a child to learn and be able to better comprehend the succinct way that the creed explains things. It's an explanation of the creed using concepts that are very familiar to children.
Find the Apostles' Creed at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Violence. Now, why does God let it happen? Answers with Ken Ham, author of the book Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Ken, whenever something bad happens, we often hear the same question over and over again. Why did God allow this to happen? What's the answer?
We know there have been many episodes of students shooting classmates and teachers to death in America. After one such event, the headline of a newspaper article stated, "Why did God let that happen?" We need to be reminded over and over that it's not God who's to blame. The fact is, it's our fault. You know why? Because we're descendants of Adam. We've all sinned against our Creator, and because of our rebellion, God had to judge the world. What we see happening around us should be a reminder that we're living in a fallen, cursed universe. And not only this, the increasing violence should remind us of something else. All through history, we've seen that the more a nation turns away from God's word, the more perverse and violent a culture becomes. If you really want to do something to help prevent these kinds of things from happening, then start teaching your children that the Bible, beginning with Genesis, is the absolute authority in all areas of life and conduct.
The Bible is also the absolute authority on the true history of the world. That topic is covered in depth by Ken Ham in his free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. Next time you're on the web, go to AnswersRadio.com. All sorts of free booklets are there for you to use at AnswersRadio.com.
What we do in times like this is pay close attention and recognize in it God's alien work to drive us to Jesus.
Pastor Matt Harrison, Executive Director of LCMS World Relief, on what Christians should know during times of disaster.
We should rejoice over our relationship with Christ, over our relationship with our family. We should speak forgiveness to those whom we have sinned against and those who have sinned against us. We should be quick to think about eternal things and not the ridiculous things that ball us up and bog us down, which are necessary for life, but rejoice in the eternal verities which sustain us.
For more information about LCMS World Relief, go to the Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org, or call 314-996-1683, LCMS World Relief. Dining with Sinners. That's what happens every Sunday at Bethany Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights, Illinois. The Lord Jesus himself comes and spreads his banquet table before us, sinners, not a target group of professionals, but sinners in need of the one thing that only he can give, the forgiveness that he won for us at the cross. Christian, seeker, unbeliever, it doesn't matter. All those who are burdened by their sin and hungry for God's forgiveness are invited to visit Bethany Lutheran Church, 5600 Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the last half hour, we continue something we started this last week. We decided that we had about 16, actually even more, of these anti-Amendment 2 ads on our hands, and we wanted to ask you which you thought, since we know that you're concerned about Amendment 2. Many of our listeners are concerned about the falsehoods that have been heavily laid out in the media blitz that has been the pro-Amendment 2 ad campaign for the last 6 months, maybe. And of late, these anti-Amendment 2 ads have been running. We were wondering which you think is the most effective and why. So we have four more to play for you. And of those four, we want you to pick which of these you think is the most effective anti-Amendment 2 and why. We already have the best of another group of 12, and tomorrow on the program we're going to put those best four together and ask you to do it one more time. Choose the most effective anti-Amendment 2 ad. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. You do not have to be a Missourian to vote on which of these four you think is the most effective and why, because this is really a national issue, and we want to hear from all of you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Heck, I'm not a Missourian. Jeff isn't a Missourian. You live in Missouri, don't you, Charlie?
I do.
You live in South County, so he's the only Missourian among us. So we want to hear from everybody on these ads. Here's the first one. This first one comes from a physician who's Dr. Russ Dietrich. the first of our Anti-Amendment 2 ads for you this afternoon on Issues Etc.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I'm Dr. Russ Dietrich, and I've practiced obstetrics and gynecology for 28 years. In the past, I have served as a clinical instructor at 3 medical schools and chief of staff at 2 hospitals. As a physician, I promised to help, not harm, human beings. Because of its deceptive wording, Amendment 2 will harm human beings by allowing human cloning, exploitation of women, and the killing of human life.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, all of these come from a different angle. Every single one of these comes from a different angle. We try and choose them and lay them out that way. But which do you think is the most effective angle, not only for the undecided, that's the one we're kind of focusing on a little bit, but even for you, which one to you is the most effective argument against Amendment 2? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc at kfuo.org. The second cut for tonight, the second Anti-Amendment 2 ad that we have for you comes from Pam Fichter. She's a regular guest on our program, and she's president of Missouri Right to Life.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Pam Fichter, president of Missouri Right to Life, urging all Missouri citizens to vote no on Amendment 2. This amendment will enshrine in our Constitution the right to clone and kill human embryos. Amendment 2 is an effort by wealthy individuals to purchase a constitutional amendment for their own financial gain. Human life should not be for sale in Missouri, and neither should our Constitution.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
Okay, is that one the most effective angle and argument that you've heard so far of the two we've played? We got two more to play for you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The third of our cuts for this afternoon comes from Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum.
Phyllis Schlafly speaks out against Missouri Amendment 2.
First of all, it would create a state constitutional right to clone human embryos and destroy them up to 14 days after creation. And that is the moral equivalent of an early abortion. We cannot allow that. Second, this amendment is completely dishonest. It says it's against cloning, and it is cloning, and we need to recognize this blatant dishonesty. And third, the amendment pretends to prohibit paying women for their eggs, but there are a dozen ways with loopholes to get around that. There is no way they can ethically get the thousands of eggs that are needed for their cloning. So it's the most anti-woman amendment that you could possibly have.
Amendment 2 is bad policy for Missouri. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, that's number three. Is it the most effective? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The final of the four for this afternoon, Dr. Richard Land of Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission against Amendment 2.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I'm Dr. Richard Land for Faith and Family and Richard Land Live, and I want to urge all Missourians to vote against Amendment 2, and by doing so, to reject the Clinton-esque word games which redefine a cloned embryo as not an embryo if it is killed before 14 days of life. A cloned embryo is human life. Killing it is killing human life.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, I want to hear from you. Which of these four is the most effective anti-amendment to add, in your opinion? Think about the person who's on the fence, undecided with regard to Amendment 2 in Missouri, and then consider it personally. Which one it approaches it from the best angle, the most effective angle for you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Issues Etc. is coming to you live this Wednesday, the 18th of October. Is it number one, physician Russ Dietrich approaching this issue from the perspective of an OBGYN? Is it Pam Fichter, who is president of Missouri Right to Life, weighing in her thoughts, her warnings about Amendment 2? Is it Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum, who laid out three reasons why you should vote no on Amendment 2? One, it's the equivalent of an early abortion. It would write into the Constitution that right for an early abortion or its equivalent. It is dishonest on the issue of banning human cloning. And she says that issue of egg donation or the purchase of eggs is problematic and there's no ethical way to get the number of eggs that they need? Or is it number four, Dr. Richard Land, who says, look, if there's one good reason, it's because the proponents of Amendment 2 have been using Clinton-esque word games when it comes to redefining cloning. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It's your chance to vote now in the waning minutes of Issues, etc. Which of these four do you think is most effective? And when you call or email us, I want to know why. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. While we wait for your phone calls, LCMS World Relief is defending life from beginning to end. And it's doing it not only on issues of life, but it does it while people are alive. It's taking its touch of mercy and its concern for believers and unbelievers worldwide who are victims of man-made and natural disasters out to the entire world. To find out what LCMS World Relief is doing, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for their logo, or to donate directly to LCMS World Relief. And at least 95 cents of every dollar that you give gets to the victims of these disasters. 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438. LCMS World Relief. Now, don't be worried, because if you've been following us here in this last half hour of Issues, etc., for the last couple days, we have been giving you four to vote on each and every day. But if you voted before, that doesn't mean you can't vote today. We want to hear from you. Which of these ads, these anti-Amendment 2 ads, are most effective and why? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. This is a brand new set of four that we've asked you to vote on today. So if you voted before, you can vote again. Let's start with Betty in Lake St. Louis. Hi, Betty.
Hi. I think the content of Phyllis Schlafly is the best. I'm a little concerned because she's such a controversial figure in some of the circles among women, but I think she directly addresses the arguments that the opposition uses. So I think her content is the best.
So do you think that Phyllis is able to reach people? Listening to your concern, Betty, do you think that Phyllis Schlafly is able to reach people in the middle on the issue of Amendment 2?
You know, I don't know, because I know a lot of younger women just automatically think that she's against women's rights. So I don't know if they would listen to her. But if someone else maybe would use that content, I think the content, like I said, is the best.
Okay, so you're voting for number three, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum, because of the arguments that she marshals against Amendment 2.
Right, because I've seen and heard many arguments that they would never pay for women's eggs and that it's not cloning and so forth.
All right, Betty, thank you very much, and thanks for starting us off this afternoon on Issues, Etc. What about the rest of you? Which of these four is most effective and why? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Betty thinks that number three, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum, is the most effective. What about the rest of you? Here's Steve, who calls from Kirksville. Hi, Steve.
Hi. My vote is one against, I guess.
Okay.
The one I was concerned about was the last one. It seemed to get more into political parties when the guy starts throwing out the word Clinton-esque. That bothered me. It just kind of started looking, if you were a Democrat and you looked at that, that would be a reason why you would just say, well, forget that. I don't want to go into that camp.
All right. Good thinking there, Steve. But before I let you go, you vote against number four. Which one would you vote in favor of, as most effective of the four that we played for you?
Yeah, I couldn't really make up my mind on that. I liked the lady that was talking, one of the first one there.
Pam Fichter.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I wish they would have one that would just say, if you're not planning to go out to vote for candidates, at least go and vote for this.
Well, that's interesting, Steve.
I wish they would do that.
All right, Steve, I'm going to put your vote down for Pam Fichter, president of Missouri Right to Life, which would be number two in today's lineup. He doesn't like number four, because when he hears that word Clinton-esque word games, he thinks, at least coming from the perspective of someone who is maybe a Democrat, they're going to say, oh, well, phooey on that. I don't want to listen to this one. What about the rest of you? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. We have no votes for Dr. Russ Dietrich, who comes at the his opposition to Amendment 2 as an OBGYN. One vote for Pam Fichter. That's number two, president of Missouri Right to Life. Number three, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum has one vote on the basis of her arguments, but not so much on the basis of whether it's Phyllis Schlafly making the arguments. And number four has no votes. In fact, it has one vote against Richard Land of Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, talking about the Clinton-esque word games being used by the proponents of Amendment 2. Let's hear each cut again. This one starts with Dr. Russ Dietrich, an OBGYN.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I'm Dr. Russ Dietrich, and I've practiced obstetrics and gynecology for 28 years. In the past, I have served as a clinical instructor at three medical schools and chief of staff at two hospitals. As a physician, I promised to help, not harm, human beings. Because of its deceptive wording, Amendment 2 will harm human beings by allowing human cloning, exploitation of women, and the killing of human life.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
Now, one thing to note about that first one is that he takes kind of the Hippocratic Oath angle. He says, I'm going to protect rather than harm human life. Here's number two, Pam Fichter. She's president of Missouri Right to Life on Amendment 2.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Pam Fichter, president of Missouri Right to Life, urging all Missouri citizens to vote no on Amendment 2. This amendment will enshrine in our Constitution the right to clone and kill human embryos. Amendment 2 is an effort by wealthy individuals to purchase a constitutional amendment for their own financial gain. Human life should not be for sale in Missouri, and neither should our Constitution.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, number two there, Pam Fichter raises the term clone and kill, which in my opinion is an accurate view of Amendment 2. Here's number three, it's got one vote, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum raising three arguments against Amendment 2.
Phyllis Schlafly speaks out against Missouri Amendment 2.
First of all, it would create a state constitutional right to clone human embryos and destroy them up to 14 days after creation. And that is the moral equivalent of an early abortion. We cannot allow that. Second, this amendment is completely dishonest. It says it's against cloning, and it is cloning, and we need to recognize this blatant dishonesty. And third, the amendment pretends to prohibit paying women for their eggs, but there are a dozen ways with loopholes to get around that. There is no way they can ethically get the thousands of eggs that are needed for their cloning. So it's the most anti-woman amendment that you could possibly have.
Amendment 2 is bad policy for Missouri. Protect life. Vote no in November.
That's number three. Here's number four, and I want to know which of these four is most effective against Amendment 2 and why. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The last one comes from Dr. Richard Land of Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I'm Dr. Richard Land for Faith and Family and Richard Land Live, and I want to urge all Missourians to vote against Amendment 2, and by doing so, to reject the Clinton-esque word games, which redefine a cloned embryo as not an embryo if it is killed before 14 days of life. A cloned embryo is human life. Killing it is killing human life.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, 10 more minutes left for your votes on your favorite, your most effective anti-amendment to add. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address. I see some email coming in here, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The final four will be tomorrow, and we'll want to hear from you then as well. If you voted before, you can vote again. Let's see what Chris has to say, calling from his car. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd. How are you?
Very well.
I'm going to cast a vote in favor of the first ad by Dr. Dietrich for this reason. I think there has been an attempt on the pro-Amendment 2 side to parade out doctors, you know, Dr. Cole from Children's Hospital, et cetera, and make it a, like an intellectual credibility thing, like, you know, the religious conservatives don't understand that it's really not cloning, but these really nice doctors understand that it everything's okay. And I think that he has a certain amount of credibility based on his background that weighs in very well with, you know, the kind of short message he gets to share. after he shares his credentials.
All right. Thank you very much, Chris. I think in the last round of voting that we did on previous ads, that the medical scientific angle seemed to be very favorable, especially when we think about it in terms of those who are on the fence or undecided when it comes to Amendment 2. Either John or Kim writes this: I vote for the ad by Phyllis Schlafly. She covers the moral and financial aspects as well as including the Christian perspective. Her voice is also very influential. So there's another vote for number three. Our third anti-Amendment 2 ad this afternoon. Thank you very much for the email, by the way. Our in-studio email address issues etc@kfuo.org. So far, number three with Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum is leading. Now, I will say the first vote for Phyllis Schlafly was, I don't know, Betty called in and said, I don't know if Phyllis Schlafly is the best spokesperson to make that argument because she may tend to turn off women, but she certainly makes good arguments. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The only one without a vote is number four, Richard Land of Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. Here's Tim calling from his car. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I really like the Missouri Right to Life president.
Okay, that's number two. And why so?
To me, it was the clearest, the most concise, and was compelling. I work in advertising every day, so I see a lot of ads, and I know that advertising appeals to different people different ways, and so that's why there's all these different choices. This is not every ad's going to pull to the heartstrings of every individual, and that's why an ad campaign can have so many facets and appeal to the most people through various kinds.
Hey, Tim, I'm going to ask you a favor. Tomorrow we're going to do our final four of all the ones we've listened to. Make sure to listen in that last half hour and give us a call because I'm very interested in advertising person's perspective, especially on that final four. All right?
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Lael is calling from her car. Hi, Lael.
Hi, Pastor. I can't recall which number it is, but it was before the Phyllis Schlafly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the one that was real succinct, real to the point about human cloning. So I appreciate.
Was it a male or a female voice?
It was a female, and it was just very clear and to the point.
That would be Pam Fichter, president of Missouri Right to Life.
Okay, I like that one the best.
All right, thank you very much, Lael. Now, what Pam Fichter said was she raised two things. One, she uses the term clone and kill, which is an accurate depiction of what's being advocated with Amendment 2. And then she also raises the issue of the Constitution being for sale to the highest bidder because there's been a lot of money spent to push Amendment 2. What about the rest of you? Which of these four is the most effective? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or email us your response and why at issuesetc@kfuo.org. There's one vote for Dr. Russ Dietrich. That's the ad number one. He's an OBGYN, and he takes the angle of the Hippocratic Oath. He's going to help rather than hurt. There are three votes for Pam Fichter. That's our vote leader right now. She's president of Missouri Right to Life. There are two votes for Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum, making a threefold argument against Amendment 2. And number four has no votes. It's Richard Land, Southern Baptist Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And he uses the word Clintonesque word games. He says they're redefining the word cloning, and that's a reason to vote no on Amendment 2. I want to hear from you. We still got about 5 minutes left for your votes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tomorrow on the program, God's Covenant with Abraham. Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House is going to join us to continue our ongoing series with her on how to teach a Sunday school lesson. That's tomorrow on Issues, Etc. Now, I've been listening to these things running. I listen to a lot of talk radio, and I've been listening to these radio ads running, and I've been asking myself each and every time I hear each one of them, knowing that the previous caller, Tim, is right. If you're going to advertise anything, if you're going to ask anything or try to sway public opinion on anything, whether it's what soda people buy or or what they vote for in November, you come at it from every angle you can possibly find. So we have heard ads that I haven't heard any that really tend to strum at the heartstrings as much in these anti-Amendment 2 ads. But we've had the medical angle, we've had the political angle, we've had a more overtly partisan angle with Richard Land. Our listeners do not seem to think that one's going to be very effective given the fact that it has no votes. We've had the more dispassionate approach of someone saying, look, this is simply a bad idea for Missouri. Which angle do you think, and which of the four we played for you this afternoon, do you think is most effective? Just a few more minutes to vote here, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, someone called last week when we started doing this and asked, why are you doing this? Why are you asking people to vote on the most effective ad? And my answer is twofold. One, I'm genuinely interested in which you think is most effective in swaying the undecided when it comes to Amendment 2. Right now, if what people are telling me is true, right now Missourians are almost half and half on this Amendment 2 issue. So, of course, the undecided are going to decide this thing. But also, I want these ads to be heard. So, as it stands, our final four, and we'll deal with them tomorrow, these are the four they're going to go up against one another tomorrow. In our final four of anti-Amendment 2 ads, which you think is most effective? I want to hear from everybody who's voted before. I want to hear from them all again tomorrow on the program. We're going to have the doctor and patient. That was the first of our final four. If you don't remember what it is, we'll be playing it for you tomorrow. We're going to have Dr. Richard Cole of Washington University making his case against Amendment 2. Dr. Xiaochun Chang of Washington University making the scientific case. And the fourth one has yet to be determined. Let's see what Ann has to say here. I'm sorry, Steve calling from Wildwood. Steve, welcome.
I just got home and been listening in my car. And vote for number one.
All right. And why, very briefly?
Because I thought two, as the right to life person, probably wouldn't appeal to the middle voter. I think Phyllis Schlafly has the same problem.
Okay, I got to let you go and get to Ann here real quickly. Ann, which do you think is most effective and why?
Oh, it's Phyllis Schlafly. I've been waiting for you to play that one. The eggs issue really might speak to the abuse of women.
All right, thank you very
much.
Thank you. All right, then I'm going to have to call on Jeff this time because we got a two-way tie. All right? Jeff, you got a choice between Pam Fichter of Missouri Right to Life, who raises clone and kill, or Phyllis Schlafly, who raises the three. Fichter? All right, that's number two. That'll be advancing to tomorrow's final four of anti-Amendment 2 ads. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'm not tomorrow. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. You know, pictures can often help teach complex biblical truths. Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for October is a picture book for young children. It's titled The Apostles' Creed, and it's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. Or you can read a detailed description of The Apostles' Creed on our website, issuesetc.org. The cost is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. Our October book of the month, The Apostles' Creed.